Imagine earning continuing education credits while doing exactly what you're doing right now. Well, you can. Gable Media has revolutionized the way you earn your continuing education credits with a groundbreaking approach. Forget running around town and scouring the internet for credit-worthy courses. Fulfill your CE requirements effortlessly by listening to engaging podcasts just like the one you're listening to now. Our podcasts are designed to educate, entertain, and inspire, all in a user-friendly environment. But wait, there's more. Architects, Gable Media is also approved as an AIA Continuing Education Services provider. Upon completion, we handle everything, from reporting your hours directly to the AIA to storing your certificates in your personal Gable Media profile for your self-reporting needs. So follow the link in the show notes and start earning your credits in the most innovative and entertaining way possible with Gable Media.
We know that running a small firm is tough, and ending the year with a profit may be even tougher. That's why we created Profit for Small Firm Architects. It's a 3-module digital course, and it's available to you for free right now by visiting entrearchitect.com/freecourse. Entree Architect Podcast, episode 133. Welcome back to the Entree Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and this is the podcast dedicated to a successful life as a small firm architect. Whether you have plans to someday start your own firm, whether you're in the process of launching a startup, or you might be an experienced small firm architect just trying to make a difference, this podcast is for you. My goal is to inspire you to build a better business so that you may pursue your purpose with passion and live the life of your dreams. Just try. Do you have an idea for a new product or a new service or maybe a new business? You know, today with all the tools available to us and so many of them completely free, you no longer have an excuse. If it's something that you really want and the only thing standing in your way is fear, just try and see what happens. On this episode, I'm chatting with someone who's been doing that since architecture grad school. He discovered a need for himself, didn't find the solution, and decided to create that solution for himself. Over and over again, he decided to try. We spoke about how he started his many companies, how he's managing each project, and the tools that he's using to communicate with his virtual teams. This week on Entree Architect Podcast, Robert Yoon, co-founder of sectioncut.com and the new monograph.io, shares his thoughts on the power of trying. This episode of the Entree Architect Podcast is sponsored by FreshBooks, the easiest way to send invoices, manage expenses, and track your time. Learn more at freshbooks.com/architect. Robert Yoon, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
It's great having you here. You are the man, or one of the men, behind sectioncut.com and many other things which we're going to get into. But before we get into any of that stuff, I want to know, like I do on every episode with a guest, I'd love to know your origin story. I'd like to sort of take us back to where you discovered architecture and what inspired you to take that course. And tell us that journey from that point to where you find yourself today.
Sure. It's kind of a typical architect story. Like, my parents are immigrants from China. I'm born and raised in Chicago. So we were fairly poor, growing up. So one of the only toys that I remember playing with was Legos. So I've always imagined building things. So I've always had a passion of creating or imagining worlds and playing with Legos. I think that's kind of where my passion to build things started. Then when I was in high school, I took drafting classes and architectural classes and competed citywide and did quite well. I still keep in touch with the same teacher now. And essentially posed him a question. It's like, what do I do for undergrad? Like, do I become an engineer? Do I become an architect? And he really steered me in the path of, you know, why not try architecture? Because he knew I had a passion in design, and architecture might let me flex some of those abilities.
Do you think being in Chicago had any influence on that decision as well? So, I mean, Lego certainly is an early inspiration, but Chicago is all about architecture. Did you even acknowledge that when you were living there? I don't know if you, when you're living there, you even realize that.
Yeah, I think when you're living there, you don't know. Yeah. It's kind of like inherent to your surroundings. Like it's, I went on so many tours as in grade school and high school. It was just kind of like always around me. It's not till a little bit later in life that I realized, oh, I really have a passion for this industry and for this practice.
Yeah. Yeah. So go on. I didn't mean to interrupt. I love the idea of being in Chicago. And I was thinking, you know, when you're there and you're growing up there, you probably don't realize what's all around you. It's because, you know, you don't realize that until later you grow up and you say, well, look around, you know, I'm in the world of architecture here.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that becomes a very important trait that we can touch upon later is how often does a person self-reflect on their current situation. But I went to a local college. I went to University of Illinois, Chicago. I did quite well. And won a traveling fellowship, my last studio. So then I spent 1 year backpacking around the world, and I think went to 20 plus different countries. And then I came back and worked small high-end residential for about a year and a half for the same professor who ran that studio before deciding that it was time to go to grad school at the University of Michigan. There I really started to figure out what type of architect I wanted to be or what things were of specific interest. And they were very heavily on the technology side. I did a lot of scripting, a lot of Grasshopper, a lot of digital fabrication, so much to the point where I end up taking another postgraduate degree, a Master's of Science in Digital Technologies, where I focused on robotics, digital fabrication, and scanning. Since then, I worked at SOM briefly in Chicago before relocating to San Francisco, and then worked across an array of small high-end residential firms to Blue Homes, which is a prefab company, to my last employment recently, a design-build company.
And so where are you? What are you doing now?
Now, starting January of this year, I went full time doing many of my projects now, which I've categorized most of them with working with Dixon and Moe.
So you're a full time entrepreneur at this point.
Full time.
Yeah. So let's start with Dixon and Moe. So is that the first one you did when you left architecture? Is that where you landed?
Dixon and Moe really gave me an opportunity to work on it full time. Section Cut started about 3 years ago, immediately after Michigan. It was a passion project. It was me realizing that I know what the landscape of architecture was outside of school, and I knew what it was inside of school. And I kind of wanted some type of remembrance of that experience. One, the exposure to the resources, to the knowledge base, to the conversations. Aren't quite the same when you're outside of academia and you're in practice. So Section Kill was really meant as a portal, as a platform, a bookmarking tool for a collective of designers and architects to share resources and share what's going on currently or trending in today's practice.
Yeah, I love that concept. And I mean, it's very similar to my mission of sort of, you know, learning as much as you can and sharing what you know. And it's pretty much the same mission done in a very different way. And I love the way you do it. What was the inspiration for that? I mean, how did that idea come about?
Like I said, like I knew before going back to school that didn't exist. So it was me essentially first trying to do that for myself. How can I most effectively save the things that are valuable to me? and that I can easily find later on. Bookmarks is always and still is an incredibly tough way to find information. So creating a simple website just to bookmark resources for myself became, I was like, okay, I'm in between. I'm working on my portfolio. I haven't landed a job yet. Let's work on this on the side when I'm not interviewing.
And who's the audience now for Section Cut?
It's still primarily students. We really focus at the architectural student sector. We feel like they're the most engaging and probably can benefit the most from this exchange.
Yeah, that's a huge change from my generation. Mm-hmm. You know, the idea of the current generation learning what they know and sharing it, and it's sort of part of who they are, is this interchange of information and the sharing, you know, and the sharing technologies that are throughout the internet. In my generation and older, I'm 46. And so I graduated in the early 90s. It was all about, you know, learning what you know and keeping it and hiding it, you know, and you know, executing on it and not letting anybody know your secrets. And I think that was a major detriment to the profession. I think as we share our knowledge, we grow and the whole profession grows.
I completely agree. I think it completely slowed down the progressiveness of the industry and how fast we're evolving and how well we receive new technology. So hopefully the next 10 years are better, because it is a mindset that has a long trickling effect. Like you said, everyone that's about, you know, in their 40s and up, they're now principals and they're now senior management, and they carry that same thought for the most case.
I'm trying to change that. That's my mission.
We need more of you, Mark.
Yeah. Well, we're getting there. We're getting there. I've just from the time that we've been out there, I'm starting to see the change. And I know it's not just me. It's sort mm-hmm. of everybody. It's you and me and many other people doing similar things, trying to get that message out there that it's important to share what we know.
Absolutely.
So where did Dixon and Moe, your agency, happen? How did that happen, and where in the timeline did that happen?
So it's funny how everything is kind of interconnected. About a year ago, Section Cut grew to a certain point where we were ready for an upgrade. We were on WordPress for a long time, and it just wasn't. It was slow, and we were growing too fast and outpacing the technology. At the same time, Section Cut was also invited to the robotics conference in Michigan. Related to architecture. So we went back and did a media coverage where I met a mutual friend to Alex and Mo, who at the time were freelancers here in San Francisco. So shortly right when I got back, I met them and I hired them to build the new Section Cut that you see now. Since then, back and forth conversations, there were freelancers like talking about our passion, talking about our interests. So why not be more legitimate? Why not stop being freelancers and let's try out an agency model?
And what does Dixon & Moe do as an agency?
We provide design and software consultancy to big tech firms.
So any kind of design, or is it purely tech design?
It's purely tech design.
Okay.
Which is very suited for where we live now in San Francisco. We provide aid and technology support for a lot of up-and-coming startups here and big technology companies here as well.
So you're injecting design into websites and apps and other online platforms? Is that essentially the bulk of what you're doing?
Correct. And it's really interesting. Both my partners also have degrees in architecture. They received their Master's of Architecture from MIT, had a startup idea called Monograph, worked on it immediately after grad school. The project kind of fell short a little bit towards the end, and then they went into freelance mode.
And you mentioned Monograph, and so is that's one of the other things you're working on, right?
Yes.
And so that's a third project. And that so that came with your co-founders at Dixon and Moe, the idea of that and this beginning of that is starting to mature and is being introduced to the world of architecture. Can you want to explain what that is?
Sure. Originally, it was more of a blogging platform for makers. Where it fell short and what I start to bring to the table is really to critique the project a little bit more. And like, I think this goes back to your previous episodes of understanding what a business plan is and developing the systems of how a project might be monetized. So Monograph was essentially reborn this year to be a portfolio builder for architects. We've done a number of websites for big and small companies across the board. Also was a couple of very well-known architects as well, Stanley Sadowitz here in San Francisco and KVA in Boston. So ideally, this is the platform where we can have a combination of our skills and our knowledge in the web space and develop a platform for architects to better utilize, to make better websites. Very simple drag and drop system.
So it's a website platform for architects, and it's based on building it around the portfolio. Is that the idea behind it?
Correct. And it's like trying to understand or help architects understand what is a better website and the value of a website that it can bring. So we're really excited to be one of the only players that are very focused on the architectural community. We're not Squarespace. We're not Wix. Our technology is very honed to particularly how architects need and how their portfolio websites need to run.
Can you get into that a little bit? What makes you different than Squarespace and Wix? What are the things that architects need to be doing that Monograph is allowing them to do?
Sure. I think we can back up a little bit and say, like, what do architects really want out of a website? 9 out of 10 or 10 out of 10 architects want to be found. It is their digital identity. Where Squarespace and Wix lacks a little bit because they're so broad, their metadata and their SEO isn't optimized. Mm-hmm. This is where Monograph becomes very useful because we're going to be so focused and we're particularly targeting architects as a target audience. We can design our SEO algorithms. We can design the technology that's around it to be very honed and focused there to allow an architect of a particular region of a particular type of work to be found easier, which is a huge advantage to a local architect.
So once you're found, are there ways of connecting as well, that once somebody lands on that site and the SEO works and the metadata works and your market finds that site, are there features on your site that sort of allows you to very quickly connect with that market?
Absolutely. We've done a lot of marketing pages. We've figured out how to best get a return on the visitors that come by and how to walk through that system of getting that visitor to writing you an email. In terms of specifics to features, that's a more larger plan for Monograph. Mm-hmm. Some of the simple things that might be rolling out very soon after we launch Monograph is essentially a RFP plugin. Knowing from our experience and from a client-based industry, you write a lot of proposals. Where can technology help? Ideally, if it's behind a website builder, then the need to use InDesign becomes less relevant. You should be able to drag and drop projects in and quickly print a PDF and have a proposal done within 5 minutes versus half an hour or an hour. And there will be a lot of other features that deals with project management, time management, staff management, accounting plugins. These are all things that we're trying to think of as we design Monograph, as it grows into a platform that's more encompassing. Where websites really, the website side is really the first 2 years of the project.
Yeah, I think it's very important for architects, because I think the majority of architects' websites, that's sort of the thing that's missing is that low friction connection, that communication tool to the to the market. That, you know, we all want the pretty pictures and we want a beautiful site, and we get, you know, a lot of people to, or maybe if you're lucky and if you have your SEO right, you might get your people to find you, but then there's no way to connect with them. You know, you have to search for the about page or the contact page and find the link that says email and hit that and send an email. And I think that that low friction, easy way to either get them on an email list or get them to contact you is a really critical part of websites that most architects are missing.
Yeah, I would look at it from a different perspective too. Most architects still, I think, might not change for a while, is their number one lead source is word of mouth, referrals. Your website is your digital representation before that first phone call or right after that first phone call. And it's really important to best present yourself, knowing that most architects' websites have not been updated or not very well done. You could be losing clients that you don't even know because of how your website's presented or how you present yourself digitally.
Yeah, I totally agree. I've been saying for more than a decade that if you're not on the internet as an architect, you're invisible.
Right.
You just don't exist. Because even if they know about you, they're still Googling you. And if you're not there, they're going to the next name.
We know architecture is a profession that our clients are usually well off. They can afford an architect. So they're smart people. They want to do their research. They want to look you up before and after those conversations. So it's really important how well you present yourself.
Let's take a quick break here to say thank you to FreshBooks for their support as a platform sponsor of Entree Architect. Because as a platform sponsor, FreshBooks has provided funding and support for our overall mission here at Entree Architect. They recognize the need for small firms like us to build better businesses in order to be better architects. FreshBooks is the easy-to-use accounting software designed to help us small firm owners get organized, save time, and get paid faster. It takes care of invoicing, expense tracking, estimating, reporting, and it all happens out on the cloud, so you have access to your information from anywhere that you have access to the internet. And I use FreshBooks for my own small firm, Five Cat Studio, and my favorite feature of the FreshBooks software is sending my invoices by email and allowing my clients to pay by credit card. When FreshBooks says that you'll get paid faster, they're not kidding. With the convenience of clicking a button and paying by credit card, many of my clients pay now as soon as they receive their invoice. And for those clients who don't pay right away, FreshBooks automatically sends them a reminder of the balance due at an interval that I set. So once I send an invoice, I can go back to being an architect, and I don't need to chase down any of my clients. And Tim Lee of FreshBooks will show you how easy it is to send invoices by email on our exclusive video series Tim and I produced exclusively for the Entree Architect community. Check out this free video series at entrearchitect.com/FreshBooksVideo. There's no catch. There's no email. It's completely free. Just go to entrearchitect.com/FreshBooksVideo and you will get the videos right away. There's three of them. Shows you everything you need to know about getting started. And then go to FreshBooks.com/architect and sign up for your free 30-day trial and give it a try. It's free. I suggest you just send one invoice and see what happens. That's how I got started. Just send one invoice to one client and see how it works. And when I did that and I got paid much faster than usual, I signed up for the rest of it and I set up my whole account in FreshBooks. FreshBooks.com/architect for your free 30-day trial. And be sure to enter Entree Architect in the How Did You Hear About Us section. I'm keeping count here, Robert. This is three. So we have sectioncut.com.
Yes.
We have Dixon and Moe and Monograph. And so, but there's a fourth one in there as well, right? There's another project you're doing. Talk about your fourth project.
So the fourth project is called Big Fluffy. And essentially it was an idea of, it's kind of like Dropbox, but for computers. So during my earlier days in the industry, I did a lot of renderings, a lot of heavy 3D modeling, and it was very, very computer intensive workload, and very time consuming. I would say a lot of the time was also not me actually working; it was me waiting for the computer to produce the 3D model or the 3D rendering, just waiting until I can figure out if it's exactly what I want before I continue to iterate on the project. So the idea came, I was like, well, why does my computer have to physically be here? Why can it not be a computer that's on the World Wide Web, and I can access it whenever I want, turn on a rendering, and then continue working on my own local machine so it doesn't slow me down? I think for a couple of small practices, small firms I worked in, that was a huge misuse of time, where, you know, if I'm working on a couple projects, one might be an SD, and I'm doing a couple renderings. It's very hard for me to switch to CDs on another project because my computer is already very slow.
Yeah,
I'm limited to only probably writing emails and answering RFIs. So I became very inefficient in working on multiple projects. So Big Fluffy is really an idea to help solve that particular problem, where you can have access to your machine, another machine that you can rent per hour on the web. And you can rent as many as you need, and you can increase or decrease your computing power to speed up whatever you're doing. It's a very different concept than, let's say, submitting to a render farm. Because when you do that, you don't see the project, and you kind of give the file away, and you hope that it comes back correct. This essentially gives you the power of a render farm, but it's another working machine. You can work on it just like how you will work on your own personal computer.
And it's accessed through a browser? How is it accessed?
Correct.
Through a browser. So mm-hmm. So you can set it up like Dropbox and start rendering on that, and then go back to your local machine and get some work done.
Correct. And rendering is just the easiest kind of like low-hanging fruit. I have a couple very small clients that are testing the product for me. They use it for 3D modeling too. They use it for client presentations. If you have an extremely heavy model that you want to spin that might not be enough on a small laptop or an iPad, this solution essentially allows you access to a computer on any device as long as you have internet.
Yeah. So this month we're talking about management here at Entree Architect. And so you have four major full-time projects going. Let's talk about the management of all that. You're one guy, and you have some co-founders in some of these practices or these projects. So how are you doing this? Sort of as a broad picture, big picture question. How are you getting all this done?
The easiest answer is they're not all going on at the same time.
Okay.
And then the second answer is I value my co-founders and my partners heavily. Actually, I do not believe in starting businesses solo. There's so many moving parts. I would never advise anyone to start businesses by themselves. It's incredibly hard. You need to lean on your partners, and you need that trust and that team to get the project off the ground.
Do you think that goes for architects as well, architecture firms? Do you think firms that start as partnerships rather than solo practitioners, there's a better likelihood that they'll succeed as partners?
I think so, and this also weighs heavily on who those partners are, right? Obviously. But yes, I think a very, very typical two-person firm structure might be one is the design principal and one is the more business savvy. And they can lean on each other, understanding that each to their own, their strengths and their weaknesses. I think that is huge versus you trying to start your own firm and a particular skill set that you lack. You'll grow slower. And you'll make more mistakes down as you start.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, my wife, Anne Marie, is an architect, and she's my partner. We started Five Cat Studio together, and she is the design partner. She is the architect end of the business, and I'm the business guy. And mm-hmm. I could not imagine doing it without her. We would never succeed to the level that we have without her skills, and she would have never succeeded to the level that we've succeeded without my business skills. And so I could not imagine doing them both. You know, it's just, right. There's just too many hats. And there's a lot of architects out there who are, and some are succeeding and some are not. But I think that's a really wise observation that there's a reason why you want to find good co-founders when you create these big projects that you're doing, whether it's an architecture firm or an agency.
Right.
So you're relying on partners and co-founders to sort of pick up the things that you're not as skilled at, and you're doing the things that you're skilled at, but that's still a lot of, you know, irons in the fire. With these projects, do you have teams working with them too? Beyond that, do you have employees in these different projects?
Yes. So for Section Cut, we do have a virtual assistant, Michelle. She's incredible. I would at any heartbeat advise always to, when you're ready, to have an assistant. It takes a lot of the minute day-to-day things that are very time-consuming off of a partner's shoulders.
Explain the concept of virtual assistant, because you said it was a virtual assistant.
Sure. Section Cut is a virtual practice. So a virtual assistant is essentially an assistant that's not physically right next to me. She's based in Texas. All my partners have an interest and a role in academia. John Stewart is a faculty at the University of Michigan. Kyle Sturgeon is a director at the Boston Architectural College. And Dan Wiseman teaches at Harvard and is a lighting designer at LAM. And I'm based in San Francisco. So Section Cut is a virtual practice.
So there's no physical office somewhere with a Section Cut sign on the door. It's all on the internet.
It's all on the internet.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like Entree Architect. We're not quite as big as you, but that's the same idea, is that our team is slowly growing and it's all virtual.
Yeah. I think when I first decided to take on partners, like a few months after I started the idea, it was like really trying to figure out who will be the best fit and what kind of skill sets I needed, knowing that this is probably a more of a hobby passion project at the time, and who can I continue to keep relationships with shortly after graduate school. John is an amazing creative director. He oversees all creative work and copy and branding on Section Cut. Dan is essentially my second wingman. We both run the technology side of the platform. And Kyle is super vital. He has an administrative take on the project. He is an administrator in academia, and he provides a lot of he opens a lot of the doors in that space.
That's interesting. Are there any other team members other than the virtual assistant?
Nope. Section Cut's run five people.
Very lean and mean.
Very lean and mean. You got it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, but, you know, my architecture firm is also a virtual firm. And so my staff is remote. I have a 10-year long project manager who used to be in the studio with us, who's now working from his own studio. And our staff, as we need them, are actually independent contractors that come and go as we need them. And so architects are doing that as well. And I think that's becoming much more popular and is a trend in architecture. I think many startups will start as virtual firms. What are some of the tools that you're using? Because that's critical in virtual practices of any sort, is that communication tool and those project management tools. Are you using anything specific to keep the communication lines working, and what do you like and what don't you like?
We're very heavy Slack users. We're on Slack all the time. We've essentially not used email at all in terms of inner team communication. And we do a lot of video conferencing. I think how we've been able to keep trucking along thus far is we're very disciplined. I think that's very vital for virtual practice, because you're not right next to each other. You need to be more disciplined in how you work, and when and how you communicate. So we have weekly meetings every week, same time, regardless if there's issues or not. this way that there's always routine and it's always structured.
And that's video conference. What are you using for video?
We use a website called Appear.in. Appear.in.
Appear.in. Yep. Okay. Appear.in. Okay. And that's like a GoToMeeting or a Zoom. Is similar.
Similar, but it's the benefits is you don't have to be a user. You don't have to create an account, which makes our team communications really easy. We just need the right URL and you get started. And it's also really flexible when you're having conferences like with a client and they don't need a Google account. They don't need a Skype account. They just need the URL.
That's interesting. I know you've mentioned that to me before and I still have not yet looked at it, but I'm going to. I think that sounds very interesting. I mean, so you don't have to sign up or anything. You just go to appear.in and use it.
Right. Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's a great tool. And I think the discipline that you mentioned is extremely important for both of my companies, Entree Architect and Five Cat Studio. That weekly meeting or biweekly in some cases is critical. You know, that's how you do it in a virtual firm. If you don't do that on a regular basis at the same time, whether or not you have a you know, something specific to talk about or a crisis to solve, that weekly check-in is really, really important. Because you discover things that you don't even realize are there when you have those meetings. Just like when you're in an office, you have that weekly staff meeting to keep things moving in the right direction. It's very easy to let those slide because you're no longer seeing these people on a daily basis unless you intentionally set those parameters up.
Yeah, completely agree. I think the project would have fizzled away if we weren't disciplined. Because it is so easy to let's skip a meeting, let's not do this. One leads to two leads to three, and then all of a sudden we're not talking anymore.
Yeah, yeah, and bad things happen when that happens, and then suddenly it becomes crisis, and then you know you're back on the video trying to solve crises instead of growing. And Slack is a great tool. I'm on Slack for everything I'm doing. I actually have four Slack teams. I have a Slack team for my architecture firm, for Entree Architect, for my partnership with CVG, Charette Venture Group, our investors. And I have one personal for my family. I have the LePage family Slack channel Slack team that I have my kids win it because they have a bunch of projects going on too. And it's a great way for us to document the projects and communicate on a regular basis instead of emailing or texting one another. We can Slack one another. And so it works really well for that as well.
Yeah. I'm a strong supporter and the same. I have a Slack channel for every project that I'm working on. And I treat every project that I'm working on more like projects, even though they are companies. But mentally, I think of them as projects. So I dedicate time throughout the week, so-and-so days and so-and-so hours for particular projects.
Are you using any other tools other than Slack and appear.in? I-N?
We've tried a number of tools. I'm on Trello for Monograph. We've tried Asana. We're heavy. All my projects are heavily based in Google Docs. So all of our documentations, all the spreadsheets, everything is on Google Docs. Of course, we use Dropbox for anything that's not a doc or Excel based file.
And so. You said are you just starting with Trello with Monograph?
Yes.
And how do you like that so far?
I like it. I think it's good it's more like a personal to-do list and to-do list for company-wide items. It's not so efficient as a communication tool. I think Slack is still extraordinarily better.
Yes.
As a way of prioritizing, monitoring, and tracking things that need to be done, things that have been done, Trello is really good.
Right, the project management part of it, not necessarily the communication part of it, but the tracking of the project and what needs to be done and who needs to do it. Trello is a great tool for that. I'm finding a lot of the community at Entree Architect, both inside and outside Entree Architect Academy, are experimenting and starting to move towards Trello for project management. It's a great tool. And I've tried Asana as well. I didn't like Asana as much. I think Trello, I like Trello's interface. with the cards. It's very easy to use and easy to understand.
Yeah, simplicity is the key. Asana is just, there's too many bells and whistles.
Exactly. Yep.
Not appropriate for a design profession. Much more for a programming software company or a finance company that needs all the bells and whistles.
Yeah, yeah. And I use for my own personal to-do list, I use Noseby, which is a great tool for putting together lists and prioritizing them, and that could be a full project management tool as well. But I just use it for my own personal list. It works really well. So, Robert, this has been a great conversation. You've shared a lot of knowledge here. I appreciate you for coming here and talking about what you're doing and how you're doing it, sharing some of your knowledge. The corner of the internet for you is sectioncut.com and monograph.io. And if people want to go visit Big Fluffy, it's bigfluffy.io and Dixon and Mo with an E. So it's Dixon spelled out and Mo, .com. Is there anything else you want to share before we wrap up here?
I don't know if I'm quite classified as myself as successful yet, but I would put a prompt to everyone to try, because this is a personal belief of mine. Like, if I don't try, there's 100% guarantee that nothing will ever succeed. Where if you do try, even if it's 1%, it's better than zero. So maybe I've been trying too many things, but say keep your priorities straight and work on things that are, you know, just a few steps ahead of you.
Yeah, only time will tell. So far, it looks pretty good from my vantage point. So thanks for sharing your knowledge here today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Is there any place you want people to connect with you? Your email or Twitter or anything like that?
My current top priority these days is Monograph. So the easiest way to reach me is Robert@monograph.io.
Okay, so Robert@monograph.io. Okay, I just wanted to catch that before we wrapped up. Thanks for coming today.
Thank you, Mark.
Complete show notes with links to everything Robert and I shared today on the podcast and a direct link to download this episode will be found at entrearchitect.com/episode133. Do you want to be profitable? Well, we can help you with that. Just go download our free 3-module course, Profit for Small Firm Architects. Try it. Just visit entrearchitect.com/free course. My name is Mark R. LePage, and I am an entrepreneur architect. And I encourage you to go build a better business so you can be a better architect. Love, learn, and share what you know. Thanks for listening, and have a great week. Are you NCARB certified yet? Join the network of over 45,000 architects who have the NCARB certificate to expand your professional reach. By becoming NCARB certified, you are demonstrating that you've met the national standards for licensure, a qualification that can be an important factor for firms when hiring and promoting. Certificate holders have a streamlined path to apply for a reciprocal license in all 55 U.S. jurisdictions, as well as access to an extensive library of free continuing education courses. Learn more today at ncarb.org.